Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
And welcome to the third episode of The Old Lady Speaks here on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host, once again, Danny, coming to you on the day before group training in Italy is supposed to start up. We don't know if it'll actually start up because, of course, this is Italy, so everything seems to change by the hour. I am here with my three usual suspects, Sam Lopresti. Hello, Sam.
Greetings, Danny. Greetings, everyone.
The 70,000-word author, Chucks. Hello.
Good afternoon, everyone.
And the proud large adult father of Paulo Dybala, Sergio Romero. Hello, Sergio.
Hello, what's good? What's good?
And this week, as an added bonus, we have our long-haired Texan, Hunter Sharpless. Hello, Mr. Hunter. How you doing?
What's up, guys? Glad to be here.
All right. As we started last week off with a little bit of number trivia, so I figured I'd pose this question to the group. Obviously, we know who the number three jersey is currently, but do you guys remember who the person before Giorgio Chiellini was to wear the number three?
Given the stuff we discussed before getting on the episode, I believe it's going to be Philippe Mel.
No, he was five, wasn't he?
He was four.
He was four?
Well, he was close. Four. Close.
Close.
Close, but
man, I can't actually think of it.
Chucks, do you want a hint? It might ring. You might get it right after I say this.
Sure.
The former blog manager before we moved to SB Nation, what was his pen name?
Aaron, I don't know. Marco Mota.
Nope. He was number two. We mentioned him last week. Alessio.
Oh.
Yep, there you
go. Are you serious? Oh, wow.
2002-03 and 2004-05, you were number three.
Wow, I see.
Looking back on it, and this was before my fandom days, he definitely was one to look like change his number around. So all the Juve historians out there, please feel free to confirm. Again, as I mentioned, training is going to be starting up, at least group in small groups, on the 18th, which for us would be tomorrow. There's been a lot going on, at least in terms of people speaking. Sam Lopresti's favorite, Mr. Spadafora, has again made his presence known in the media. And I guess I'll start with you, Sam. What has your impression been as to this actual date of mid-June for a restart? I mean, do you think it's actually being possible, even though we're trying to predict a month into the future?
I think it could be. Obviously, the virus is the main factor. I mean, you know, if we start seeing spikes in the general population as Italy starts opening back up on a full macro non-sports level, then obviously I don't think we'd see that. But if things stay the way they are now, which, you know, is definitely on the back part of this curve, I think it's feasible if there's no squabbling. But of course, in Italy, squabbling is the third largest pastime after calcio and tax evasion. So it's going to come down to this medical protocol, which now it looks as though even if the clubs had the option, most of them were going to refrain from starting group training until the Italian government allowed for the German model of quarantine, which is that if a player tests positive, that player and only that player is quarantined, as opposed to the entire squad, which is what the Italian government seems to be focusing on. And this is the clubs, which are separate from FIGC, the Italian Federation, who were the ones that were originally making that negotiation with the government. So now the clubs have met and have come up with a new protocol that has to be forwarded first to FIGC, then to the government. The government may or may not let them start up that way. We've seen Vincenzo Spadafora on more than one occasion disparage the way the Germans have done this, pointing out Dynamo Dresden, the two Bundesliga team that was placed into a full team quarantine by local officials, not by sports officials. That has to be made important there, after two of their players tested positive. So this is kind of a long circle back to the discussion that we opened up last episode with, which is what happens if we get positives. And teams were reporting positives as late as yesterday. Parma reported a pair of them. It's going to come down to the political wrangling, because any delay in group training is going to push back the start of the season. So it's really tough to say at this point, just because of the politics. It's going to come down to the egos of the clubs versus the egos of the people who are responsible for this in the Italian government. And when has that ever been a problem in Italy before?
Never. Almost never, actually. I would say it's very, very rare in general. But talking about what's going to happen, I think the last thing I read about what's going to happen if there's a positive was that the whole team would be quarantined for 14 days if there's a new positive, which to me just signals that it's just not going to happen. I can't see a future in which no player in every single team gets no positives until the season is over. It's just not going to happen. You're going to get at least a couple. And if you get, you know, if you get a couple, maybe you kind of play around with schedule, somehow make scheduling magic and somehow finish. But if it's more than that, if it's four, if it's five guys, if you have five clubs that have to be quarantined for a couple of weeks, that's it. There's not enough time. I mean, at one point, you just say, hey, let's keep playing until October, November. I mean, if you have to keep scheduling this, you know, 14-day breaks because someone got a new case. When this whole thing started, I was deeply in the camp of figure it out, like figure out a way for finishing the season, figure out a way to get a champion, figure out a way to do it in the most fair way possible. Now, I just think, you know, it's just easier, not only for this season, but moving forward. I just think you should cancel it. I know they probably won't do it because of money, and I know they have to complete the season somehow. The Champions League spots are up for grabs. The championship is up for grabs. I know they want to do it, but I just don't see a scenario in which they actually manage to do it. So I would actually say at this point, it's probably better to just call it off. Just, you know, figure out a way to declare the Champions League spots in the most fair way possible, the relegation in the most fair way possible, and just kind of call it. I just don't see a scenario in which we actually finish the season at this point.
Yeah, and so there's another detail I'd like to add to that of what Sergio said. So I'm just reading from an article now right here. It says the clubs also want the government to drop the requirement that teams and their staff spend 15 days isolated in a training retreat, so a good deal, I suppose, before the league resumes. So it's an interesting thing here. You think, all right, well, sounds maybe okay-ish, but so scrolling down a little further down the article, many clubs do not have these facilities, apparently. So, you know, it says players would theoretically have to practice together, then eat and sleep at the training center, or a hotel entirely available to the team to avoid any risk of contagion. So, I mean, it's, to me, it brings up kind of the general issue with coronavirus right now around the world. You know, how much, given the stage we're in right now with coronavirus, okay, we've all, big issue, big emergency, we've all, like, countries have taken measures, quarantines, lockdowns, etc. So now basically a month or two has passed and countries are slowly easing restrictions. But I think we're at the stage now with the coronavirus where we all have to ask, or well, really society has to ask, what level of risk are we now willing to accept as a population in terms of health? So now that we are opening up, slowly opening up stores, you know, barbers and stuff. Here in Ohio, barbers are opening up, I believe, sometime next week. I forget exactly when. But yeah, you know, that's just a general issue. Like, what level of risk is society now willing to accept as we open up, as we slowly, hopefully, resume to life as usual? And I think an indication of that is, like, countries that are opening up their economies more and more, I think, are willing to accept more risk more quickly than those that are like, okay, we're going to keep stuff locked down for now. And it just depends on people, you know, and I think that, you know, coming back to just this whole issue with football in Italy, it's just our clubs, is the FIGC, plus the clubs, plus the players, then how much risk are they willing to accept? That, I mean, based on kind of the recommendations right now from Spadafora, I mean, it seems like they're erring on the side of caution, which I understand because, I mean, Italy was really quite traumatized by coronavirus. And they were, I mean, I think after China, they were the first country to truly, like, be really, really, really hard hit and really traumatized by this.
I feel like opening up sport in Europe is a little bit different than opening sport up here in the US right now, where in certain areas of the United States, this virus is still going on nigh on uncontained because of certain political things that I won't get into here because that's not our purview. But also you have to remember, we in the US, we're about 6 weeks behind in terms of this all starting up, in terms of it getting bad. The countries in Europe that are opening because that risk level is dropping a little bit overall for them. Now, Italy, obviously, being one of the places in Europe that was the hardest hit and has probably the most to lose in terms of a second wave if one were to occur, I can totally see why they're taking a precautionary route. Personally, I feel like I agree with you, Sergio, in that under the current thing that the Italian government wants, I don't see a season. If the clubs are able to force them into a German and English style policy, then I think a season is possible. But under the current thing, I think you're right. No.
All right, Hunter, let's bring you into the equation here. You wrote an article earlier this week about Juventus's identity stemmed from a Twitter question. So we're trying to work the Twitter questions into as many platforms as possible here. You looked at the club before and after Ronaldo and the players that have been here and left and all that. But I guess kind of what's your general impression kind of going off the article about how things have changed at Juventus, not only since you've been a fan, but just kind of in general this past decade or so, as the expectations at the club have gone back to kind of what they were, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting thing to think about. I went into the article actually kind of convinced that I would come out on the other side, like, yes, Juve have lost their way a little bit. And then I ended up writing myself into believing that maybe there is still some of that old character, you know, left. And I think that main ethos and that main spirit that what represents the best about Juventus is still there. It certainly is different though. When you have Ronaldo, it doesn't even matter if you go up against someone who you should be considered an underdog to. If you have Ronaldo, people are still going to treat you like the top dog, basically. So I think, you know, what I loved about Juventus, you know, a few years ago, like when we played Real Madrid in the final, was that we were up there with any club in the world, but every game it still felt like we had an underdog mentality. Like we still weren't Real, we weren't Barcelona, we didn't have the money of the English teams. You know, we still had this really cool grit about the club. So I think that has for sure changed. And, you know, there's the Ronaldo thing, but this is a smaller factor. But to me, you know, seeing Mandzukic get kind of sidelined from what was really a pretty important role was not only sad because I love Mario, but he, I think more than anybody, maybe even more than Chiellini, was just that total warrior. So, I mean, you know, like any debatable topic, there are good points to be had on both sides, but I came out, you know, leaning one way, but I think there's a lot of interesting territory like to explore on that question.
Bringing up Mandzukic is definitely going to get Sam riled up for the third straight episode. So congratulations on that one, Hunter.
It's always my goal.
Yeah, just to kind of build up on what Hunter said, I thought it was a great piece. I really liked it. And I think, you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head there with a couple of things that I have been thinking and having some trouble kind of putting into words, because yeah, you are right. Most of what makes Juventus is still there, and yet there's still some few changes here and there. You know, from the if you want to say the marketing campaigns and the change of the logo and trying to make the stadium experience a little bit more of a show and like a little bit more Americanized, if you will. All of those little things that the pragmatic in me says, okay, you have to do that because that's how football moves and that's how football evolves, and you know, you just have to move with the times. But you do kind of sometimes miss a little bit of what Juventus used to be in the earlier part of the decade, which was strong team, a smartly built team, a team that while had all the history and all the accomplishments and all the trophies of the Barcelonas and Real Madrids of the world, was still kind of like in that 1B tier, you know, decidedly below those clubs, just out of money, out of what have you, know. So once you bring in a guy like Ronaldo, he is one of the greatest players of all time. If you can bring a guy like that, you bring a guy like that and figure it out afterwards. Once you make a move like that, there is no possible scenario in which you can claim any sort of, we're still the underdogs, we're still not at the level of the Real Madrid and Barcelona's of the world. Like, you just can't do that anymore. As a fan, I definitely felt like we lost a little something there. I would agree with that. Not everything, but it is different now than it was in, say, 2012 or 2013.
For me, it was also very, you know, resonated with me as well, because I had many of the same thoughts and more the same conflict and the same kind of cognitive dissonance as you described in that article. For me as well, and you know, this is obviously different for every fan, but for me, becoming a Juve fan, I think the thing that connected me so much to Juventus was that we were, I mean, relatively humble in terms of our spending, our transfer moves. I mean, obviously we spent money, you know, obviously we still spent millions and millions or tens of millions of euros in the transfer market. That's inevitable. But I always liked that we were distinguished is the right word. Distinguished from the likes of Real Madrid and Galacticos, Barcelona, now Manchester City. It seemed that they just throw an endless barrage of money. I mean, just truckloads and truckloads of money at players in order to, you know, it's a controversial phrase, but in order to, you know, buy championships up, buying up all the players. But I guess my question for you is, like, since the Ronaldo transfer, do you still feel the same about Juventus in terms of being a fan? Like, how has that affected the way you feel about being a Juventus fan?
I don't think that my feelings have changed. I think that it's like, I don't particularly like Ronaldo. I, you know, I think that's been clear from stuff I've written, but I still want him to score goals. And it's almost like it's definitely a conflict within me. Like, every time I watch, I'm like, oh, I don't really, why is he going to do the stupid stance with the free kick? And
you're not the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same here. Dragon Ball. Like, you know, but still I root for Juventus. I think that, I don't know, it'd be weird. You know, Dybala is probably my favorite player alongside Chiellini. And had we moved Dybala to try to make this happen, like, it almost seemed like we did, maybe then, but I don't know. At this point, I just feel like I've hitched my horse to a wagon and there's not really a whole lot I can do.
And this is something that I've wondered sometimes. Hunter, I wonder if you agree with me on this as well, or if you have a different take. I've always felt like at least for some of the fan base, expectations have very much outpaced reality because of how quickly things started rocketing into the stratosphere with Conte. No one expected the first title, much less the way we did it. And then when it happened, all of a sudden, a lot of people started expecting to be at that Real Madrid type level very, very soon. And I think that might be one of the reasons Pepe Marotta ended up getting forced out last year, was that he felt to me like he was still focusing on the fact that, no, we weren't there yet, but that some people had thought, no, we must be, because we've won all these titles in a row and we've made two Champions League finals. And now it's time to go big instead of keeping the build. What do you think about, do you think that that's a factor here?
Yeah, I think expectations are always a factor with Juve, with most teams in that stratosphere. It's interesting, yeah, whether those expectations have escalated, which I agree they have, if that started to occur before the Ronaldo transfer, and then maybe in some way were the kindling to make that happen, or if they happened after the Ronaldo transfer, or it, what is probably the case, some of both. I think that there now are those expectations, and I feel like they're somewhat justified because we went out and got Ronaldo. Like, what's the point of having him if you don't actually have those expectations? Now, you can pick apart to what degree he makes sense on the roster, and we've talked a lot about the midfield over the last few years and stuff like that. So I don't know, but what's the point of not having those expectations when you do go get Ronaldo?
It feels like we've been one transfer away a couple of times now. Like when Gonzalo Higuain first came, he was the missing piece, and then Ronaldo was supposed to be the missing piece. It seems like the rest of the team hasn't maybe been built properly for that to be the case.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I feel like a broken record the last few years, but I think that time when we grabbed Ronaldo, Higuain was still great. And the Higuain-Dybala pairing was doing really good stuff. We weren't having any issues scoring goals. We were having issues with that connectivity from back to front and being able to put out a really, really cohesive world-class 11, and just weren't, we didn't really have that midfield totally, totally tooled. And I feel like if we had address the midfield with that Ronaldo money, not just the $100 million from the transfer, but the exorbitant salary he carries, I feel like that was the time to do it. And we were maybe not one specific player away, but we had proved over the last few seasons before that we could beat anybody. It's tough. I still can hear arguments for the Ronaldo thing. We can talk about it and debate about it ad nauseum, but I think that the idea that maybe that fans have the feeling that we're always one transfer away, it's probably not super healthy, but it's certainly part of it.
Yeah, seeing as it's been what if week on SB Nation the past 7 days, what if Juventus spent that Ronaldo money on something else is kind of one of the bigger ones that loom in, I'm sure, a lot of people's heads these days, knowing that the midfield is what it is at this point. And obviously we've seen so many transfer rumors over the past 12 months involve midfielders, and especially these past few weeks without any games going on. It's like, what is this club going to do to get its midfield to where, it matches the star-studded names it has in attack, and obviously the very talented defenders and outside of Danilo and everything. Sorry, he's becoming my punching bag, I know.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Speaking of punches being thrown, that's a professional transition. We've seen in the press these last few days, Giorgio Chiellini and our old buddy Felipe Melo have been dueling more so on Melo's end than Chiellini's end, seeing as his opinion of Mr. Melo has come in his recently released autobiography. For the group, how big is your popcorn bucket, and how long have you just been sitting back and watching Felipe Melo continue to dig his grave at Juventus even deeper than it was 8 years ago?
Oh, I stovepop my popcorn. I don't use microwave crap. I'm using my pasta pot for this one. It's
great metaphor.
Like, and what makes this so amusing to me is the fact that you can talk like Gab Mercati did on ESPN a few days ago about how uncaptain-like it is to name names the way Chiellini has. It's not maybe necessarily the way that other players who've recently come out with autobiographies like Andrea Pirlo have done. But at the same time, neither of the two things that have really been causing controversy, the fact that Mario Balotelli is a waste of talent and that Felipe Melo is a waste of space, are particularly controversial.
And Balotelli has already forgiven Chiellini.
And, Balotelli's already forgiven him in exchange for a signed copy of the book.
Ta-da!
But in the meantime, Felipe Melo keeps on trumpeting the number of trophies he's won. Great, you won the Confederations Cup in 2009. Good for you. That's meaningless. That's the most meaningless international cup ever. And then he goes on talking about how, like, he in one interview, he's like, oh no, I don't just kick people. I gave Robinho an assist that one time. And in another one, he talks about how after a game, he went down the tunnel and punched Diego Lopez in the face for some perceived slight that happened late in the game. This is not necessarily a question. I don't think this is necessarily a question of decorum. I think that that's dumb if people want to think that, oh, the captain shouldn't be doing this. But I don't see anything controversial with the actual subject matter, because it's right. He's not wrong.
That's the best part of it. He's not wrong. He's 100% right. And obviously we're sitting thousands of miles away, and Giorgio Chiellini lived it every day for 2 years. If we can see it, it's kind of like, here's firsthand knowledge of it.
I think that the absolutely best part of this whole feud was Felipe Melo just blatantly and casually saying, like, hey, but it could all be on the water under the bridge if you sign me, you know? I mean, that's what's up.
I'll come play with Ronaldo. I have to admire that.
You have to admire that. I mean, that's just shoot or shoot. I would, you know, for what it's worth, I'm available too. Like, if you want it, like, I'll go. I'll play. I mean, it's as likely as Felipe Melo getting re-signed at this point. I'll play as well. What the hell? I'll probably be cheaper. I will actually play for free. How about that? Just food, accommodation, that's it. That's all I need. But yeah, that was by far the best part of the whole saga. And also, how dare you, Sam, by insulting the Confederations Cup, the only international senior level tournament that Mexico has ever won, 99 Confederations Cup.
Take that, Lopresti.
Against a decidedly B squad Brazil team, but we don't care. Like, we want that. That's not our fault. You brought subs. Like, that's not on us. We want that fair and square. So, you know, I'll take great offense to that.
Yeah, trophy's a trophy, isn't it?
You beat up in the Olympics too.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I guess because, you know, the Olympic is kind of like its own thing. I guess you could argue that's the biggest accomplishment they've ever done. But at the senior level, because they've also won World Cups at the under 17 level. But at the senior level, that's it's the Confederations Cup and like a bunch of Gold Cups, which if you want to make an argument for a trophy that doesn't count, it's the Gold Cup. But, you know, that's the one banner we have. Banners hang forever.
Isn't that the funny thing about the Coppa Italia? It's like the first few rounds you don't really care, and then all of a sudden the semifinals, it's like, ooh, trophy's almost there.
Yeah, if I could add to the Chiellini Melo ordeal, I mean, it's all a bit ridiculous, really. You know, the cynical part of me just thinks, wow, like, wow, since there's no football going on since, was it March, mid-March, we've grown so bored, so lacking news, that we're going to make stuff up now, and we're just going to say, well, let's just, you know, create some news like this, or create some controversy, because, hey, we need something to write. So that's the cynical part of me. Then again, I do realize that, obviously, Chiellini wrote this book way before the coronavirus happened, and, you know, he planned to publish it, obviously, way before. So fair enough. I mean, the Balotelli part seems to be water under the bridge now. You know, they, you know, had a laugh and all that. That seems to be fine and all that. And Philippe Melo part, well, you know, at the end of the day, what is he going to do? I mean, just, he can whine, you know, and moan from across the Atlantic. On the other hand, part of me kind of, I mean, you guys will obviously remember the Mauro Icardi autobiography from some time ago, when there was that big controversy he had with the Inter Ultras. And I forget exactly what the story was, but, you know, them getting mad at
him. Murdered them, didn't he?
Yeah, the story that he described of, like, you know, I was going to, after a game, I went up to them, I told them I was going to murder them. I forget exactly what it was. But, yeah, it reminded me of that whole thing. And it just makes me think of just autobiographies in general of footballers. It's just like, I don't want to say what's the point, but what's the idea? Like, okay, I get it. Like, you're writing your autobiography, you're a famous footballer, but as a writer and as a writer, as you know, we all are, part of me thinks like, are you guys just writing this just to be like, well, when I was a footballer and like, I told this guy he was annoying and he was a jerk. And well, then I told this guy, or is it like, what is like the point? You know, it's just weird. I just find it odd.
And for the record, Chiellini is donating the profits of his book right now to COVID relief. So it's not like he's just trying to get money for himself off this book by ginning up controversy. It's not helping him either.
That's fair.
I think we've talked enough Felipe Melo for one episode, so.
All the episodes.
For all the episodes, exactly. Exactly. Hopefully we don't have to reference him ever again on this podcast, unless it's in jest.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Got a few Twitter questions here like we have been doing from my buddy Arthur Schmidt the IV. While Juve have seemed to use the free transfer and swap deals in recent years, given the current economic situation due to the pandemic, what type of deals will Juve focus on regarding swap deals? Will we see players who have been away on loan, i.e. Sergio Romero's twin brother, Christian Romero, used more than current squad members?
I would actually like to clarify that. He's my cousin. We've been, you know, lifelong. I just recently discovered that, so it's huge news for me. Yeah, I think it's funny to hear all the transfer rumors right now, because most, if not all of them, have some sort of, you know, swap or trade component to them, which, as we know, it's awfully, awfully uncommon in the footballing world. It's not as usual as in, say, the NBA or the NFL, where, you know, trades are more common between players. You rarely see that in world football, but we are seeing that now as like the backbone of most of the rumors out there. You get, you know, Miralem Pjanic being just sent everywhere, like PSG, Chelsea, Barcelona, like everyone wants him. It's like, we're playing FIFA and it's just like, okay, I got to get rid of this guy and I'll just put him in every single package I can do. So yeah, it's still to be determined if it's actually going to happen, like if it's actually going to be the structure of most transfers this upcoming transfer season. What I do think is that Juventus have two, if it does happen that way, Juventus do have like two very important trade pieces in Romero and guys like Rolando Mandragora, for example, who are guys that have high level experience, have proven that they can play at Serie A, could be valuable trade chip out there. I heard one of the latest rumors that we have on the side is those two guys plus some cash, I believe, for Federico Chiesa, who has also been one of the constant transfer targets. I guess as much as it pains me to say for my long lost cousin, he actually makes a lot of sense as just a trade chip, because the back line is kind of very populated right now, with Mary Demiral coming back from injury, obviously Matthijs de Ligt being one of the big names right now in the defense, Giorgio Chiellini still not slowing down, Leonardo Bonucci still there, Daniele Rugani, he's still there. People forget he is still a Juventus player. He could just, you know...
He's still there.
I mean, he's still there. He could play at some point. We don't know. So it would probably be hard for him to actually get a lot of minutes. So if you're looking at trades, that would be one of the main names I would actually see making sense.
Yeah, I just want to say, as a guy who writes most of the transfer rumor posts on the site, trying to figure out new ways to introduce each rumor, knowing that every single one has been a swap rumor, is becoming very tiresome to go back and say, did I say that 2 days ago? Did I say, hey, guess what, guys? Swap deals are going to be prevalent this summer. I know Juve has done a few swap deals over the last few years, but this summer, or whenever, as I keep saying with the caveat, whenever the hell these transfers actually happen, it's going to be just something we've never seen before, because with Paratici saying how much he thinks, you know, these swap deals will be happening, that, you know, it's just fed into the rumor cycle saying, okay, player X will be able to be acquired if you've got potentially these two guys who add up to that kind of value. I feel pretty safe in saying that we're not going to see the 80 million euro transfer for Paul Pogba this summer, but, you know, it's just one of those things where we're, like everything these days, we're just going into such uncharted territory that we have absolutely no clue what is next. So, Chucks, I'll spin the next question over to you, seeing as it's from our buddy Handy Vandy again, and surprisingly, it's a twofer. If you had to make an entire starting 11 with only one Juve player, could be from any time period, who would it be? His answer would be Lord Storaro, because he's the jack of all trades. And then part two would be, what Juve player has the best hair of all time? And if you don't pick Roberto Baggio, then you're completely wrong. Hunter Sharpless is not eligible to be picked, but as we saw earlier in this call, his hair is looking quite marvelous in quarantine.
Well, I'm glad I get the funnest questions.
You just get the Handy Vandy questions.
Which happens to be both one and the same, so thank you. Yeah, the first question, you know, I think it just depends on what I would want to do, or I guess in what mood I would be in. If I'm in kind of a brute force, just, you know, full steam ahead kind of mood, then I would want to take, you know, the most attacking player ever, which, I dislike Ronaldo, so I'm going to go away from him. I'll take someone like Paulo Dybala. Be a little entertaining, and then have 11 Dybalas, and then just... you know, 1-2 touches it around your own corner flags. So that'll be fun. But if I were going for actual, you know, pragmatism and actually trying to win a game, I'll probably like someone like a Marquisio, or even better, Arturo Vidal. That would be something, you know, 11 Vidals. And then the best hair, well, you know, I gave him a shout out last week, and I'm going to give him another shout out. Juan Cuadrado. Johnny Square,
you are just driving that Johnny Cuadrado bandwagon as hard as I've ever seen you drive it, Chuck.
Yeah, just some appreciation there. You
know. I've got to give that one to Handy Vandy though. The man's nickname was the Divine Ponytail, and you pick somebody else.
Well, I'm a bit of a contrarian, as you all know.
must be the Dutch in you, Chuck. Final question here from Joe in about 15,000 numbers, so I won't try and read them all off. According to quote-unquote rumors, it seems that Sandro Tonali prefers Inter over Juve. Where do you think Tonali will play next season, and how devastating would it be for Fabio Paratici and Juve to lose Tonali to Inter, knowing how highly regarded he is?
To answer the second part of the question, very. Sandro Tonali is the kind of player that, when Beppe Marotta was the man in charge of transfers at Juventus, Juventus would get with no questions asked. He's Italian, which is always a bonus, and he would be exactly what Juventus needed to play in that regista role that Pjanic has never really made his own. Free Bentancur to go running up the field a little bit more and do all of the things that Bentancur do. And I personally think that if he plays for anybody other than Juventus next year, then that's a massive failure on Paratici's part and another really bad mark in his book. And as for where he might play, I really don't know. I've read one or two reports saying that Inter is a little bit upset at how quickly we swooped into the Dejan Kulusevski deal, and that they are determined to beat us out of Tonali on that basis. And a determined Beppe Marotta when it comes to a transfer is not something to underestimate, but it's going to come down to, I think, who he thinks will give him the most playing time for his buck. And if we can't assure him of that, then he probably would go to Inter.
I think it really is going to come down to whether or not the Juventus, you know, front office believes that this guy can come in and from day one be the guy in midfield, because right now the midfield is not one piece away. We're not just like one good player away from just retooling that in the entire unit. So I think that the moves right now is just, if I were the Juventus front office, which I'm not, thank God, because I've been wrong often. So I don't know. I think I would have really, really destroyed the club at this point. But if it were up to me, I think you have to say, listen, if we bring this guy, if we pay the amount of money, if we make this guy our big ticket signing for this summer, is he going to be the guy that we can, you know, ship Miralem Pjanic, or, you know, sell him or whatever, and just put him in there, and we know he's going to make this team better. We know he's not going to have a period where he's not playing well, or where he's, you know, trying to adapt or whatever. Like, are we sure, confident that he can be that? Because if he's not, then at that point, I think the guy probably has a better shot at Inter to play and to get consistent minutes and to improve, especially if, from what we're hearing, that's what he is looking for. I mean, because Juventus could make that bet, could say, listen, we're going to, this is it. Like, this is your midfield, come in, be a starter, go. And if they feel confident on his ability to do so, yeah, I think you have to do it. I think you have to sign that guy. If you're not confident he's going to do that, he will probably go to Inter. That's really pretty much it, in my opinion. That's the crux of it.
Inter's midfield is, you know, if Tonali signs, is looking very good, very young, and very Italian. So that's quite interesting. So kind of anti
on a play
and anti Inter from what we've seen. So. I've kicked around this story idea the last few weeks, is like, who knew that the last game we saw that Inter would be having more Italians in their starting lineup than Juventus would. So
that's that day.
Yeah, that's interesting. Obviously something that, as Italy becomes more and more known for some of the young talent that it has coming up, that is what we'd like to see Juventus getting back to, knowing how strong the Italian core has been over the years. All right, well, that wraps it up for episode 3 of The Old Lady Speaks. As we said last week, we are officially on iTunes, we are officially on Spotify, and we are officially on Google Podcasts. So go ahead and search Black and White and Red All Over on all three of those, and our feed should pop up. Thank you again for all the feedback. Thank you for the 5-star ratings on iTunes. We greatly appreciate it, especially the commenter who gave me a personal shout out in his comment, because I like my ego boost. So, for Sam, for Chucks, for Sergio, and for Hunter, who ducked out early because he's buying a house today. This is Danny, your blog overlord. Stay safe, and thank you for listening once again.